Hi everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the geek show's dedicated comics, manga, graphic literature podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today are, as always, Mick.
Hello!
And Andrew.
Yes, as always, except for that one time when I wasn't here. And I guess all those times before when Mick wasn't here.
We've expunged those episodes from history.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Not that we're revisionist or anything, but we are.
Yes. And
well, yes, it was part of an exciting all-new 4Panel Now Legacy reboot.
Absolutely. Which we then realised wasn't working. Is that so we did another reboot.
Yeah, is that we weren't Ultimate 4Panel and then 4Panel Max.
That's right. And now we're 4Panel Now. And this is episode one. Welcome.
Hooray. I can't wait till we get to 4Panel 2099.
Ah, well, wait till next week when on episode one of the all-new, all different 4Panel, we'll do exactly the same things in a slightly samey kind of way.
And the 4Panel universe will never be the same again.
Except in the ways that it is.
Yeah, I'm waiting for when we run out of ideas and we end up having to copy DC Comics and do weird crossovers with the other shows.
Yeah.
Spoilers for the future. Are we not already doing that with Eclectica?
Yes, we are.
And then what we could do is we could have little spin-offs that explore what might have possibly happened in the earlier life of 4Panel, but in a different universe.
Speaking of spin-offs,
yeah.
That helpfully takes us into the news.
Awesome.
Wow. It's almost like we planned this, isn't it?
No, it's definitely not like we planned this.
No, I spoke to someone the other day, and they said, we can't tell you, don't plan it.
Ha! The fools!
I know!
See, I spoke to someone the other day, and they kept telling me about God's ineffable plan. I was like, what's ineffable?
Reminds me. Happy Ramadan to all our listeners, but also we're going to have to put up with Fasting Rob for a little while.
Yeah, Mick has never experienced Fasting Rob.
No. I mean, normal Rob's difficult enough to cope with.
Oh, Fasting Rob's easier. Just if you just hear me snoring in the background because of lack of blood sugar, just leave me asleep.
Yeah, but basically we occasionally need to kind of shake him back awake.
So what you're saying is that Fasting Rob is very similar to watching Inhumans, Rob.
Yes.
Oh, actually, that reminds me of a bit of news I forgot to put in.
Oh!
Exciting announcement, everyone.
No,
it's
go
the
on.
The final ever Inhumans watch.
See, you said that the last three times.
Yes.
Okay, but this time I mean it because now it's been officially cancelled.
Hang on, didn't it get officially cancelled the last... like a month, 2 months, 3 months ago?
Maybe that was just when, you know, they removed the web page on like ABC's website, and then when all the actors went on to other things. But now ABC, to the surprise of literally maybe one person who doesn't pay attention to things, yeah, that series is gone.
To the guy whose name follows the words created by on the credit.
Yeah, that guy's not going to be getting any work soon, is he?
They've actually finally sent him the email. That's what's made it official.
So he showed up to work yesterday morning to find the office completely empty.
And a for sale sign outside.
Yeah.
And just a sticky note on his computer saying, well, what did you expect?
My main question is, how do they get anything done if it takes them this long just to confirm that something's been cancelled?
Well, I think what you've got to bear in mind is that when you think of the fanfare that was given to Inhumans when they announced it in the first place,
yeah,
you've got. I mean, I'm going to use a sporting analogy here.
Oh, this should be fun,
right? So, in the game of football, yeah, the aim is to score a goal in the opponent's net. That's run of the mill. That's every day. That's day to day. But every now and then, you get that one moment of perfection where a player who's not even in the opponent's half just picks up the ball, strikes the sweet spot just right, it curves beautifully through the air and dips just under the crossbar and enters the net.
Okay.
That is the level of failure that Inhumans was.
Oh, because he did it in his own goal.
Yeah. It was like the anti-perfect goal.
No, it was the most perfect goal. Unfortunately, it was to the wrong direction.
Yeah. So that's how spectacular the fall from grace was, and I think they've just recovered from it.
Oh, right. So they've literally just gone through therapy and they've finally convinced themselves it wasn't a dream.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. That explains a lot to me then.
Okay. That is the first and last time a sporting analogy has been used on 4Panel.
It's okay. We promise not to do it again unless we do.
Because I think we already did before.
No. This is episode one, remember?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
But, guys, you don't need to be too upset because we've got some new shows coming in that I'm sure will replace the hole left in our hearts.
Okay.
Well, that's why we've got Krypton, surely.
No, shut up, Mick.
I don't factor Krypton into this.
Yep, we're just moving on. Doom Patrol, there's going to be a Doom Patrol TV series.
My first question is, how are you going to make this? It's also my second, third, fourth and fifth question.
I mean, I assume it's going to involve, you know, the hiring of actors.
Cameras.
Probably dressing them up in some kind of costume, writing a script that will include things for them to say.
You know what I mean.
Directions for things for them to do.
Possibly some prosthetics and CGI.
No, it's going to need more than just some prosthetics and CGI. This is Doom Patrol we're talking about.
But yeah, no, as much as I hate to say it, Rob does have a point. I'll read out the synopsis. So this is going to be spinning out of the Teen Titans live-action show that's showing up. So I assume they're going to be set in like the same universe, which I think is different to like the DC TV universe that's going on now.
Okay.
So the synopsis is Robot Man, Negative Man, Elastigirl, and Crazy Jane, led by modern-day mad scientist Dr. Niles Calder, the Chief. The Doom Patrol's members each suffered a horrible accident that gave them superhuman abilities, but also left them scarred and disfigured. Traumatized and downtrodden, the team found purpose through the Chief, who brought them together to investigate the weirdest phenomena in existence, and to protect Earth from what they find. Part support group, part superhero team, the Doom Patrol is a band of superpowered freaks who fight for a world that wants nothing to do with them. Picking up after the events of Titans, Doom Patrol will find these reluctant heroes in a place they never expected to be. Called to action by none other than Cyborg, everyone's favourite Justice League member, who comes to them with a mission hard to refuse, but with a warning that is hard to ignore. Their lives will never, ever be the same.
Wow.
Huh. Yeah.
Doom Patrol is a comic book group that fights a man called Animal Vegetable Mineral Man.
Yep.
Oh, excellent.
He can turn into any animal, any mineral, or any vegetable, two of which seem more useful than the other. Oh no, look out, Robot Man. He's going to caress you with his gherkin fingers.
Oh no, he's throwing broccoli at us.
I mean, that being said, is turning into any animal really that useful? I mean, like, surely you only need to turn into like five animals at max.
Well,
I don't know. There's not going to be a point where he says, oh no, Doom Patrol, you've beaten me in my golden eagle form, but how will you handle me now that I can turn into an osprey?
I don't know, because he could literally, he could be on a high building, jump off the building and go turn into a blue whale and splatter them.
Yeah, but presumably he would also then splatter himself. That seems counterproductive.
He could, well, he could turn into any mineral as well.
That would make more sense.
Can he turn into, like, a steel blue whale?
Well, he can literally turn into a Looney Tunes cartoon, can he?
Yeah. No. Doom Patrol is basically a super-powered Looney Tunes cartoon.
He could turn himself into an anvil as he's falling.
I mean, basically, the point is, being able to turn into any kind of mineral is ridiculously overpowered.
Yeah.
And kind of makes the other two seem a bit useless in comparison.
Yep.
True.
Although, to fit in the comics, he does also turn half his head into a T-Rex, which is pretty awesome.
What does the other half turn into?
Oh, no, that's just a man face.
Well,
that's just weird.
Because if he was all T-Rex, he would just be animal, vegetable, mineral. He's got to keep some man in there.
Well, yeah, but he could keep the neck down human, couldn't he?
Yeah, just have a T-Rex head. It'd be like Raptor Jesus.
I mean, the T-Rex wouldn't mind because it's used to having shorter arms than its head implies.
Wait, so would this be an actual size T-Rex head or like in proportion to the rest of his body?
No, I want it to be a real size T-Rex head.
It means he can't go anywhere.
It just topples over the minute he transforms.
But yeah, there's someone writing down like the notes for the show's budget right now and just sobbing.
I don't want to make any predictions here, but I worried this is going to go the way of Inhumans.
It does say here that they're called to action by none other than Cyborg, so nice that he got work after Justice League.
Yeah, but I am worried...
He's probably not that expensive to hire, is he?
No. I am worried...
It's not like he's going to command movie-style salaries.
Yeah, true.
How dare you, Mick? How dare you even try and imply that solo Cyborg film isn't going to happen?
Me? I implied nothing. When is it going to happen? Go on, tell me that.
When the New Mutants movie comes out.
Yes.
That soon? Really?
Yes.
Okay. God, what a year that's going to be. We're going to have New Mutants, Cyborg, the Flashpoint movie.
Aquaman. No, that is actually coming out, isn't it?
Batman, which will both star and not star Ben Affleck at the same time.
As he's still doing his Schrodinger thing.
He is. There was yet another report saying, but maybe he'll be in it.
Excellent.
Do you think that's just what news sites do when it's a slow day?
We ought to do that on our website. We ought to just make up comic book related stories.
One of them will eventually be true.
Ryan Reynolds has announced a Deadpool Green Lantern crossover.
Hang on, are you saying we're going to be like the Weekly World News of comic books?
Yeah. Well, no. The trick is to say Ryan Reynolds may star in a Deadpool Green Lantern crossover.
Yeah, and here's the twist. He won't play either role.
That would be good.
Yeah?
Any other news?
Yep. So we've had one exciting TV show announcement, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. Which I mean, we're now plummeting far, far down below to where no man should ever go.
Oh, I think I know where you're headed.
Epics, an American something, a channel streaming service, who knows, not me, and also I don't really care, has ordered straight to series Pennyworth, the origin story of Alfred the Butler.
I'm glad you clarified that, because I got really confused and thought Pennywise.
Yeah, that's not really getting confused, that's just mishearing.
Which is why it was confusing.
Okay, I just wanted you to be aware that what Andrew said didn't confuse anybody except you.
No, I misheard it, which is why it was confusing me. Anyway.
I'm pretty confused. Just the Pennyworth is based on DC characters created by Bob Kane with Bill Finger. It follows Bruce Wayne's legendary butler, Alfred Pennyworth, a former British SAS soldier who forms a security company and goes to work with Thomas Wayne, Bruce's billionaire father, in 1960s London.
Yeah, that doesn't sound interesting at all.
Why? What story is there to tell about Alfred Pennyworth?
That hasn't already been told. In yeah. Exposition on Gotham.
Oh, but speaking of, this is being created by Bruno Heller, the same guy who made Gotham, but also apparently it's completely unrelated to Gotham.
It sounds to me like this is the spin-off that Epics can afford. They wanted to do a DC show, this is what they could afford.
Okay, I'm very, very confused right now, okay? Alfred is a butler. Oh, God, no. I'm not going to finish that thought because it leads to a horrible dark place.
Oh, we like horrible dark places.
Not this one, you don't.
Especially ones created by Garth Marenghi.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one involves an anime series. You don't want to go there. But there is a so-called comedy series about a combat butler.
A combat butler?
Yes. And Alfred being former SAS and working as a bodyguard for Thomas Wayne is a combat butler, isn't he?
Oh, no, it doesn't say he's his bodyguard. He's the co-owner of their security firm.
But he's former SAS, which means he's got combat experience.
It is a bit of a jump going to work with Thomas. It does say work with Thomas Wayne, not for, in 1960s London.
So how did he end up becoming Thomas Wayne's butler then?
Well, you know.
Did he
maybe,
lose a bet
maybe,
or something?
Maybe his side of the business didn't take off quite so well and, you know. Maybe he didn't meet his performance targets and he just got knocked down and down the pecking order until eventually the only role that was left was butler.
I thought or he lost a bet.
And what if he lost that bet to a mysterious man known only as Joey Kerr?
Yeah.
Because that is like the Gotham way of shoving Batman villains in.
Yep. Oh, this doesn't sound appealing to me at all.
I mean, if it sounds like anything, it sounds like any number of those sort of 60s ITC action series, doesn't it? The sort of man in a suitcase, the Baron type things.
It sounds very much like someone's handed in a script for a reboot of one of those.
Yeah.
And then someone else has just crossed all the names out and replaced them with Batman character names.
Yeah.
Sounds about right. Oh, God. What if Thomas Wayne is supposed to be John Steed? Does that make Alfred Mrs. Peel?
No. No, it doesn't. Because what it doesn't say is that they changed Thomas Wayne's nationality.
True, true, true. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, we should. So, Stan Lee is apparently suing his former company, POW Entertainment, for $1 billion.
Now, this is another one of those comic book news templates, isn't it? Stan Lee sues, insert name here, for insert value. Because he does seem to be getting a bit litigious in his old age.
Well, I could understand some of his lawsuits. This one, I don't know. What happened with this one, Andrew?
Basically, the gist of it seems to be the people running the company, Shane Duffy and Gil Champion, tricked Lee into signing away his name and likeness. At least that's what Stan's claiming. So he's suing them basically for damages and sort of regain his brand.
Okay.
But yeah, Stan Lee has had a rough time of it recently.
Yeah, I mean, these guys aren't related to the guys who stole his blood, are they?
I imagine not, unless this is all part of some vast conspiracy, possibly involving an ancient ritual.
To clone Stan Lee and make him an all-powerful god.
Hmm.
The alternative explanation is that rich people are terrible.
Yes.
Yeah, wow. Okay, I didn't expect that.
So this case seems to centre around the fact that he wasn't aware of things.
Hmm. I mean, he's not been in the best of health.
No.
And his health has been up and down. So he has been taking a lot of medications, and some of those medications have basically just zonked him out.
Yeah, and he's been through a lot. Like, his wife has died, he's been robbed, he's been accused of sexual assaults.
Yeah.
There's been claims that he's been a victim of elder abuse. So... like Mick mentioned, he fired his longtime business manager and sued writer Gerardo Olivares.
So he's not really had a good time of it.
No.
No, he hasn't.
But he's finding his way through it because of the fans. The fans are his superheroes. That's what he said in his tweet on his newly reclaimed Twitter account.
Yeah, what was it? Somebody hacked his Twitter account?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that is what... Poor Stan Lee.
Oh, we could only wish him well.
Indeed.
Yeah, and just hope things get better for him.
Yes.
What he needs now is the thing.
Little blue-eyed Benjamin.
Yeah. He could just get rid of the lawyers and just send Ben in. So, have a bit of clobbering time.
So Stan Lee needs a large guy to go around hitting people. It does solve a lot of problems.
Send a message. It sends a message.
Exactly, and that guy could serve as his bodyguard and possibly start up a security business in 1960s London.
I've got a list of other people he could visit, like the producers of Fan4 Stick.
I think Ben would do that one for free.
In fact, any entry in the Fantastic Four universe in a cinematic way.
Even Roger Corman's Fantastic Four.
Yes.
I don't know. Kind of, for me, verges on so bad it's good. There's a bit where Dr. Doom just sort of strokes a guy's face.
I think the problem you've got is when you say you're going to allow things because they're so bad, they're good, you're opening up a potential cesspool.
Yes.
And it is a slippery slope down into that cesspool.
Yes, it is.
To be fair, it's a slippery slope down into most cesspools, in my experience anyway.
We're just going to leave that there and move on, shall we, Andrew?
Let's move on to something nice and good and wholesome. So, Kevin Feige has confirmed that there are plans to bring Miss Marvel, the Kamala Khan version, into the MCU.
We knew it was going to happen.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, she's one of the characters who we absolutely knew was going to be part of the MCU, just a matter of when.
Yeah, but like there is a definite plan to, introduce Captain Marvel, build her up a bit, and then put out Miss Marvel as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, you couldn't do it the other way around because Kamala Khan is a massive Captain Marvel fan. That's kind of the reason why.
But I mean, it's great that Kamala Khan's going to be in it, but I'm just starting to feel at the moment, not specifically in comic book movies, but just across the movie industry in general, there just seems to be this fight to be the first to do this, the first to do that. Oh, we're going to be the first to have a strong female superhero. We're going to be the first to have an all-black superhero cast. We're going to be the first to have a Muslim superhero.
They're not the first to have a Muslim superhero. Everyone forgets Turkish Superman.
For good reason, Rob. For very good reason.
No.
So whilst I welcome Kamala's entry into the MCU, I do feel that there's a little bit of a cynical backdrop to all this being the first to recognise this. And I think the fact that we do still feel the need to recognise this level of diversity means that we don't quite get it yet.
Yeah.
It should just be organic. It should just happen.
Well, yeah, no, I completely get where you're coming from. It's basically like a more advanced form of tokenism, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, he has basically said, all he said, though, really, as far as I understand the story, is that Ms. Marvel is going to be part of the MCU and it is going to be Kamala Khan. We don't actually have any more details than that, though, do we?
Oh, no. But, crucially, you said the Kamala Khan version in the lead-up to this.
Yeah.
That there's no intimation that there's any other version of Ms. Marvel.
Well, with them introducing Captain Marvel, there can't be any other version of Ms. Marvel, because Captain Marvel being Carol Danvers, if they went Captain Marvel as in the Kree Marvel, then they could have Carol Danvers be Ms. Marvel. But since they've got Carol Danvers being Captain Marvel, they can't have her be Ms. Marvel as well. And since Marvel's only had two Ms. Marvels, Carol Danvers and Kamala Khan.
Oh, yes, that's
actually,
right, Rob.
Because I think you're fine. There have been many Ms. Marvels.
Have they?
Yes, just sit your ass down. It's time for a comics history lesson.
Go for it. This is good. This is always good.
So, are you sitting comfortably, children?
Oh, I forgot. What's her face? The one was Captain Marvel for a while as well. The one who had those weird powers and had the black and white costume. The African-American woman.
Oh, nope. Wrong again.
What was she then?
So, Rob is referring to Monica Rambeau, who was Captain Marvel, and then also Photon.
Oh, right. Okay.
Something else. Like Pulsar and Spectrum is like the name she's got now.
Yeah. She's,
but there was also a Miss Marvel who was a completely unrelated character called Sharon Ventura.
Was that?
Yep, she was a Fantastic Four character, and she got turned into a female version of the Thing.
Okay.
And yes, that means there is a comic book panel of two people who basically look like sentient mountain rangers about to get it on.
Oh, God.
In typical comic book originality, she bears the name She-Thing.
Yeah.
Does anyone remember the song Get Your Rocks Off?
Is it? I don't think they've done this right. They've not followed their own continuity. Carol Danvers should be now called She-Marvel.
Okay, right. See, I didn't know about Sharon Ventura. I knew about Monica Rambeau. She leads New Wave now, Next Wave now, doesn't she?
No, that was many a year ago.
Oh, right, okay.
No, she's part of the Ultimates now.
She's upgraded a lot, hasn't she?
Yeah, why?
No, I was just...
You're saying women can't break through that glass ceiling in the comic books, Rob?
No.
You would have thought a female superhero was the one person who could break through a glass ceiling.
Anyway, all right, so...
missed out Carla Sofen.
I didn't, I was getting to Carla Sofen, also known as Moonstone and Meteorite, member of the Thunderbolts, who was turned into Ms. Marvel as part of Norman Osborn's Dark Avengers, and was later replaced by Deirdre Wentworth in a later version of that same team.
I so hoped you were going to finish that with Deirdre Barlow.
I don't know who that is.
That's a soap opera reference for some of our listeners.
See, I didn't know about Sharon Ventura or Carla Sofen.
It's fine. It finally gave me an opportunity to just sit here and yell about obscure comics continuity.
That's fine.
But the main point I wanted to get across is just two rock monsters smashing their lumpy, lumpy nether regions.
Get your rocks off.
That's what continental drift is, children.
Oh, no!
Sliding up against each other. I hate comics sometimes.
Yes. Anyway, moving on. Let's move on. Move on. Move on.
Is there any more news to move on to?
Technically, no. But I did want to bring up the point, because what is quite a big news story in the comics industry at the moment is there's a lot of stuff relating. I don't know if either of you have heard of a YouTube channel called Diversity in Comics.
I've heard of it. I haven't actually watched it.
Yeah, yeah, good. So basically, it's the channel of a guy called Richard C. Mayer, a kind of very low-level comic writer with delusions of his own importance, who basically, the gist of his videos is, wah, the SJWs are ruining the comics.
Ah, right.
And he tried to publish a comic book series with a publisher called Antarctic Press, and they decided to cancel it. And now his whiny baby fans are throwing their toys out of the pram.
Oh.
But yeah, but that's the thing. I wanted to mention it just to point out we are aware of it. But I don't really want to talk about it.
Because
it involves kind of the side of the comic book fandom that is literally the worst. That they are made up of what are, it's possibly one of my new favourite insults, they're a bunch of gammons.
Gammons.
Oh.
Great. It's an insult for basically white people who get really annoyed at things, and so their faces go red.
Awesome. I like and it.
There's even been a debate this week as to whether using the term gammons is racist.
Which was horrifying. Because that debate happened on a Monday, and like the Sunday night before, I watched the first episode of The Day Today. And I panicked that, oh my god, I'm stuck inside a Chris Morris comedy show.
Oh, can you imagine going to the supermarket?
Oh, just wait till you get to the war episode, Andrew.
I'm very excited. I'm on a Chris Morris binge.
Cool. Anyway, there was a trailer for Deadly Class as well, wasn't there?
Yes, and that was the thing I was definitely getting to and hadn't forgotten about. The twist, dear listener, is that I absolutely had forgotten about it. But yeah, I watched it. Have you watched it?
Yes.
I haven't watched it because I became aware of it only moments before joining the show.
That seems fair enough. But yeah, seems good. Doesn't show off that much. Cause it's mostly a lot of quick shots from the show and then cutting to the directors. Who are the Russo brothers? Them guys, what did the Infinity War movie that people seem to kind of like?
Yes.
But yeah, it does seem to be a lot of them saying, this is going to be a good TV series.
Well, considering they had Rick Remender on there saying, this is going to be a pretty accurate TV series as well, it made me very hopeful.
Yeah, and like that's what I was going to say, because even though we didn't see that much, it does look very accurate to the comics.
Yeah.
Which excites me a lot.
Yes, it makes me happy.
I think the only one thing that looks very different to the comics, and it's certainly not something I'm going to complain about, is instead of being like a wizened old Chinese man, the head of the King's Dominion School for Assassins is Benedict Wong.
He's getting everywhere these days, isn't he?
He is. And like, he's always a lovely surprise. Like, you know, you're just sitting there, you're at home, you're watching Annihilation, it's all going fine, and then, oh, look, it's lovely Benedict Wong.
Whoa, is Benedict Wong turning into Morgan Freeman? Is he just going to appear in everything just because?
Yeah.
I hope so.
This makes me happy.
We're doing a good job of making Rob happy today.
I mean, I don't want to use the term easily amused, but I am, and I did, and actually, I do want to use the term easily amused.
See, if you tie that in with low blood sugar, it explains a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I think basically the main worry is if someone just jangles some keys in front of him, that's it, Rob's gone.
Well, that's no different to normal.
Actually, I think it's happened. He must have seen an interesting spot on the wall. Rob, come back.
What? Yeah. Anyway, shall we take a break?
Yes.
Yeah, I think we need to.
Ah, There really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literary Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literary Loitering.
My name is Quentin Flynn. I'm here on The Geek Show. Why? Because I play Raiden in the Metal Gear series. I am Lightning, the Rain Transformed, and I have been transformed by hanging out on this show. So tune in and turn on, you'll love it. The Geek Show, it rocks.
The Geek Show is the largest independent podcast network out there, and to be independent, we need a little bit of help every now and again. So if you want something to show your love of The Geek Show, head over to thegeekshow.co.uk, click on the shop, and buy some of our lovely wares. Buy them all.
Back, and now it's time for comics, and kicking us off is Mick.
Hello! So, this week I've been reading Deadpool versus Old Man Logan, which collects issues 1 to 5 of Deadpool versus Old Man Logan. It's written by and drawn by Declan Shelvey and assisted by Mike Henderson. And it's not bad, but it's not great. There's some fun moments in it, there's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing. Basically, it starts off with a big explosion and Logan berating Deadpool for his tactics. And then we get a flashback to how they got into this situation. Deadpool is classically Deadpool and causing mayhem pretty much wherever he goes and crosses paths with Logan. And it turns out that they are both on a mission to save the same newly activated mutant girl. Just one problem with that. She doesn't want to be saved. She has her reasons for this. Okay. And over time, Deadpool and Logan kind of work together to try and achieve the same aim, each berating the other for having stupid plans. And then eventually, Logan becomes aware of an element of her mutant power and starts to understand why maybe she shouldn't be saved and rescued and left where she wants to be. And of course, that then creates a bit of an argument between Deadpool and Logan. Because unusually, Deadpool sees this as his option to be a proper hero and do the right thing. There's some quite violent scenes. It's quite an interesting twist with the girl. And it's well drawn for the most part. There's a few scenes where it's a little bit scrappy. But it's an enjoyable read. It's not going to win any Eisner Awards, I don't think. Not to self. Should check whether comics have won Eisner Awards.
Oh, yeah, I think they've definitely won Eisner Awards.
Eisner Awards.
I mean, are they not named after the guy who made The Spirit?
They are.
Yeah, I think comics might win. I think maybe even Eisner Awards might be for comics.
No, what I meant was I need to check before I say it's not going to win any Eisner Awards.
Whether it's actually won,
whether it's actually won or won.
Oh, my God. Whew.
Yeah, I knew about the Eisner Award. I'm not completely unaware of the comic book industry, which is probably a bit of a relief to our listeners, as I've been doing this show for nearly a year now.
I'm just saying I am the one who seems to always have to explain points of comic continuity.
True.
No, it's fine. I can put down my list of, oh no, Mick is finally gone. Who do we replace him with, people?
Will Eisner. He's the one who dishes out all the awards. There's also the Harvey Awards as well, for comics. And they both replaced the Kirby Awards. There you go.
After they were eaten.
There you go. A little history of comic book awards. But yeah, the nice thing about Deadpool versus Old Man Logan is there's no real continuity in there. So you can just dip into this. You don't need to have a full history of Deadpool or a full history of Wolverine to understand what's going on. Obviously, they've got a bit of history. And obviously, people who are more familiar with Wolverine than Old Man Logan may be a bit confused as to why Logan's an old man. But other than that, it's fine.
Thing is, anyone who knows about Logan knows he's not just an old man. He's a very, very old man.
Yeah, I mean, I've not read that particular continuity, so I'm not sure exactly how he's ended up being that old, but here. But that I didn't need to know that for this story. That's the point. Mm. And Deadpool's just Deadpool. No more need be said, really. He's reasonably well written. I've seen much worse characterizations of Deadpool. I've seen much better ones. So, yeah, but it's a kind of nice tie-in because apparently there's a movie out featuring one of these two characters. Hint, it's not Logan.
Is it the girl?
Oh, you were so close. You had a 50-50 shot there. It's the bus driver on page 57.
He is my favourite Marvel character.
They're hoping to spin it off into a massive franchise. They're already talking about Bus Driver from page 57 too.
Is he? He is the surprise character find of 2018.
He is the breakout. But excuse the mutant reference there, but he is the breakout character of 2018. Trust me.
You do know Bus Driver from page 57 is going to be one of Rob's potential episode titles now.
Yep. Always like to try and put one in there, make it easy for him. We give him such a hard time.
But that's good. It's about time we finally capitalised on his popularity.
Yes. I like to throw Rob a bone sometimes. So, that was Old Man Logan versus Deadpool.
Okay, good stuff. Moving on to me. I also have some X-Men stuff. And in fact, in the mighty Marvel tradition, I've got two in one.
Okay.
Well, hey.
So, basically, we got sent in two things that I've already talked about a bit on our Twitter page, which is at 4PanelPodcast. That was very smooth on my end, I thought.
Very smooth.
So I'm just going to go over them briefly here. We have got Volume 2 of Generation X, Survival of the Fittest, and The New Mutants, Demon Bear.
Okay.
So Generation X, like I said, I've talked about, and I also reviewed Volume 1. So this is still written by Christina Strain, with art by Eric Coder and Amilcar Pina, with colour art by Philippe Sobrerio. And yeah, basically, if you go back and listen to what I said about Generation X Volume 1, that but more of it, because this is the final five issues? Yeah, five issues. It's a bit confusing, because it does that fun thing that Marvel decided is a very good idea, of suddenly skipping from issue 9 to issue 85.
Ah.
And yeah, it just continues to be... It's a very fun mix of superhero stuff, but also just about a group of really weird kids sort of finding friends with each other. And also I want to point out that I really love the art, because they actually draw teenagers who look like teenagers, sort of awkward and gangly, rather than just the usual style of these are like adults but smaller.
Oh, right, yeah, the usual thing that they usually do.
Yeah, especially in comics. So yeah, that's very good. And Demon Bear is also very good, because it collects the Demon Bear storyline from Marvel's The New Mutants, which is written by Chris Claremont with art by Bill Sienkiewicz.
Is it about a bear that's demonic?
Yeah, basically it's about a giant demonic bear that's haunting Danielle Moonstar, and the rest of The New Mutants have to go in and fight it. And it's just super weird and trippy, which is exactly what you want when you have Sienkiewicz doing the art, because he does all these amazing things. Like there's a bit because Danny gets injured and rushed to hospital, and so like the surgeons are working on her while the rest of the new mutants are like in the demon realm fighting the bear. And there's just a bit where suddenly it like cuts back to the hospital and you see a massive like bear claw rip through the fabric of reality.
So she's being haunted by the spirit of a giant demonic bear.
Yes, and it's exactly as amazing as that sounds.
See, yeah, I was about to say that just sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, and like genuinely, it's absolutely terrifying to look at.
All right, you don't need to say anymore. You had me at the giant demonic bear.
I think we just established earlier in the episode that you're quite easily pleased at the moment.
No. In this case, when it comes to giant demonic bears, you know, they're very few and far between. They're a rare breed. And, you know, I like my bears, but I like my bears demonic and giant especially. It's one of the reasons why I like the Hillbilly comic so much. That also has a giant bear, but that one talks and kills demons and witches.
I mean, this one also talks and kills things.
Exactly.
But yeah, the thing is, though, that storyline runs through New Mutants 18 to 20, which you may notice is not a lot of issues. So they've also thrown some other stuff in to pad this out. So we also have X-Force issue 99, which is, again, where they have to fight the demon bear, which is written by, I believe, John Francis Moore, with art by Jim Chung, who does a lot of kind of Marvel's promotional stuff now.
Okay.
And that's a nice enough little story. But I feel like the main problem is it's very much something that's happening in the middle of a bigger story arc. So there's lots of weird stuff with, like, Danny Moonstar. She's had her powers swapped, and then in the end she splits into, like, five different versions of herself.
That must be handy for multitasking, though.
You'd imagine so, yeah. And then they also include X-Force. Well, what interesting what they do is they've included bits from X-Force issues 7 to 10, which is a later series from 2008, in which Warpath and Ghost Rider fight another demon bear. Although this demon bear is completely unrelated to the other one. Apparently there's a whole bunch of them wandering around America.
America has all the luck.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'd question it, but it's a story in which a flaming motorcycle on a skeleton and a 7-foot-tall Apache man murder a giant bear.
So just another night out then?
Pretty much. But I like what they've done. It's basically, that was like a subplot that was running through those issues. So they've got, sort of like cut it out and made it into sort of one issue, which I thought was fun. And this book does something which I think literally every single other graphic novel should do, which is before each story, they include like a few pages from previous issues to sort of set the scene.
Okay, that works for me. I like that.
Yeah, that's a really good idea, and more things should do that.
There should be some kind of brief synopsis somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like you were saying, Mick, it would be easy just to throw in a page of like, this is Old Man Logan, he's from the future.
Yeah.
He's replaced normal Logan, who is deaded at the moment.
Oh no, that's a spoiler, Andrew.
I mean, he died in a comic called The Death of Wolverine.
Well, yeah, but, you know, no one really stays dead in Marvel.
Including Wolverine, who's back alive now.
Yeah, I was about to say, Marvel's deaths aren't like DC's deaths, where they actually do kind of die first and then get brought back. In Marvel's case, they say the death, but, you know, they don't even have the decency to do that first.
Yeah, no, this has been a particularly bad one. Because I think it was literally like a month after Wolverine died, they were like, and here's Old Man Logan from the future.
Yeah.
And also, you know, X-23 is Wolverine now, and here's Wolverine's son from a different alternate universe.
It's like Marvel traded in their prime Wolverine and got four in return instead.
See, I would agree with that, except that X-23 is like a really good Wolverine, possibly even the best Wolverine.
That's a fair point. Anyways,
also, she wears that costume a lot better.
Yeah, this is it my turn?
It is your turn.
It is.
Like you, Andrew, I kind of have a two-in-one. This is Avengers Mighty Origins, and it's actually two Avengers stories. The first one is written by Peter David with art by Andrea DeVito, John Burren, Nigel Rayner, Mike Bowden, and Walden Wong. And the art changes a lot throughout this story. But it is one continuous story all the way through. It starts off with, you know, you were talking about the pages at the front that tell you what's happened previously. Well, this kind of does that, but also kind of doesn't. It has Loki shouting at himself and giving lots of exposition as to why he's in the situation he's in, what's happened, blah, blah, blah. Turns out that he kind of shot himself in the foot, as he usually does, by getting Iron Man to fight the Hulk, and then everything happens, and so he kind of creates the Avengers. And the Avengers are now Ant-Man, Wasp, Thor, Hulk, Iron Man, and Captain America. And then it goes on to him realizing, because there's a little troll who's spending time in exile with him, the troll points something out to him, and he thinks, oh, actually, I can still do things. I just don't have to be roundabout with them. And so the scene shifts to Tony Stark, who is having his doubts about the identity of Thor, you know, saying he's a so-called God of Thunder, blah, blah, blah. Thor has his doubts about Captain America, thinking, well, look, we just happened to stumble across this guy while we were on this mission. We could have, you know, if we were like 1 second earlier or later, we would have missed him completely. So somebody obviously put him in our way. Captain America's got suspicions about Tony because he's been trapped by the Red Skull, who apparently has a billionaire backer. And, you know, so Cap is thinking, is it Tony? Tony could be involved in it. Everyone's starting to suspect everyone else. And in the middle of all this, they're trying to hunt down the Hulk because Thunderbolt Ross has told them the American military is pissed off with the Hulk and they need to capture him because Hulk fell out with the rest of the Avengers and went on the run.
It's usually so easy to get along with Hulk.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Cap points out very fairly that there might be a Jekyll and Hyde thing going on. Hulk might have a human persona. Iron Man, Tony Stark, the super intelligent guy, laughs that off and says, ah, that's not possible. Hulk is a giant green monster.
Yes, don't be silly, Steve. That would be like literal gods coming to Earth. Or men building, like, billion-dollar battle suits that they could soar through the sky in.
No, no. If that lasts all the way up until Tony runs into Dr. Calvin Zabo and his alter ego, Mr. Hyde.
Of course.
Right? And then, you know, Tony gets
assaulted. I love the comics are such a art form.
Yeah. And then Tony gets assaulted by a bunch of rock men who arrive in a ship that looks very similar to a ship that was there when Thor first arrived on Earth. So naturally he starts suspecting Thor. Thor gets attacked by Zarko, the Tomorrow Man, who launches two Hulks at him. One grey, one green. And Thor is basically... Thor convinces both Hulks to stop taking orders from Zarko and attack him instead. Turns the tables and everything is kind of going pear-shaped. Thor, Cap and Tony are all arguing with each other. And then Hulk turns up and he's laughing his ass off saying, look, I leave and you're all starting to fall apart because I take away the one thing that all you can gang up on. And look at you, you're all falling apart. You don't even see what's going on. And so they attack Hulk and Hulk's beating on them and laughing and they're beating on him and trying to figure things out. And Hulk keeps telling them, you're being manipulated. You don't even see it. You're all stupid. And then just runs off. And eventually, eventually things do get resolved. But I'll be honest, I didn't like this.
It sounds kind of dumb.
It sounds kind of dumb because it is. It's dumb. And I just want to read something, right? On the back, you have, from IGN.com, some words about Peter David as a writer.
Oh, I have some words about Peter David as a writer, but go on.
Okay. I'm just going to read the first two sentences out first, right? Peter David is one of the most consistent and prolific writers in comics. He's had
significant... I would agree with that. He is certainly consistent.
And prolific. He's had significant runs on some of the top household names in superhero comics. Those are the first two lines. Notice in those two lines, it doesn't say anything about him being good, right? Then there are three dots, which indicates there's a big chunk missing. His ability to balance team dynamics, superhero action, long-standing plot threads, and downright revealing characters in character expression is superb. I disagree. I don't think this was superb at all. If he's that good, this is a long way from being his best work. But then the scene changes, because then you move on to something that is actually quite good. And this is the new version of the Avengers with Jane Foster's Thor, Sam Wilson as Captain America, Falcon Captain America, or Captain Falcon, as people call him, Vision.
Yeah, because he's going to show you his moves.
Yeah, Vision, Spider-Man, Peter Parker, Hercules. And this is the new version of the Avengers. And this is part of the 2016 run, written by Mark Waid with art by Mike Del Mundo. And I've got to say, the artwork in the first Avengers story, not that good. The artwork in the second one is lovely. It's very, very, very nice.
Oh, yeah, I love Mike Del Mundo.
Yeah, it's really, really nice artwork. Also, the new Wasp is part of the team as well. And she and Spider-Man do not get on. They kind of hate each other, which makes me think...
A Wasp and a Spider?
Well, she hates Peter Parker. Well, she hates Spider-Man. She hates Peter Parker, not realizing that they're both the same person. Parker has his Parker Industries. He wants to take over funding the Avengers. Yada, yada, yada. Everything is all about getting the Avengers together. But then they run into a problem, which is Kang the Conqueror. And he's after the Vision, and he's basically saying, where is he, Vision? Where is the child? Now, Andrew, remember that storyline you told me about the Vision and Kang and the baby?
Oh, yeah, this is leading off when the Vision just, like, kidnapped baby Kang.
Yes, this is leading off that. And so Kang is with the, is it the Red Centurion?
The Scarlet Centurion.
Scarlet Centurion, that's it, yeah. Red and the Scarlet, Kang and the Scarlet Centurion are working together because basically they're kind of, are they the same person?
Yeah, I think they're supposed to be like the same person from different points in the timeline.
Yeah.
Also, I think sometimes the Scarlet Centurion is like Kang's son.
Yeah. But anyway, Kang being able to play around with time like the Doctor, he's got a big advantage over the rest of them. And so he figures out, he basically beats through Vision and tries to get the location of the child from Vision. And Vision has basically offloaded it somewhere else. Kang figures out how to track down the location of the child. And in revenge, this ends with something that I didn't see coming until the last couple of pages. And then you're like, wow, that's some big karma right there. So I'm going to leave it at that. But that really what makes me want to continue reading Avengers, because I've got to see how they actually resolve that.
Yeah, I think I did actually read that storyline a while ago, and it's a fun storyline.
Yeah.
Really, the main problem with like that whole series was it was trying to tell like a big, quite fun storyline with Kang, but then I had to keep stopping to do like all the Marvel events.
Yeah, which is a shame. I mean, you got two different versions of the Avengers there, and I've got to say I prefer the second one, the original Mighty Origins one that's on the cover. And it has a stupid cover. It has Thor balancing on one leg for some reason.
Because he is a dainty ballerina, Rob.
He is actually in a ballerina pose. He's got the hammer pointing forward and he's side on with one leg raised, knee bent.
Maybe that's it. Maybe him and Hulk got tired of trying to see who the strongest is and just decided who could plié the best. Unfortunately, the answer is obviously Hulk.
Is that why him and Scarlet Witch in the movies have such a good relationship? Is there ballet classes?
Do you mean Black Widow?
Sorry, Black Widow, yeah, sorry.
Yes, that's the entire basis of their relationship.
Yeah. I'm beginning to worry now with that reference to Scarlet Witch instead of Black Widow.
Because they just mentioned the Vision.
Does Rob actually watch any of the movies or read any of the comics?
No, it's because I just mentioned the Vision, and Vision used Vision dated Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, and also, to be fair, we say that, but even if Rob doesn't, he has put far more thought into that relationship than any single writer at Marvel has.
Yeah,
well, that's true. That's true.
Anyway, moving on.
Is it me?
Yes.
It is back to you.
Oh, bear with me a second, because things are getting exciting in the world of slime.
Is it time for slime?
It's time for slime. Which could be a catchier title than Inhumans Watch, when I think about it. Slime Time, with Mick.
I like it. I think it's our new recurring segment.
Well, possibly not for much longer.
Oh, no.
I suspect we may be coming to some kind of denouement, eh?
Trust me, the story continues after that.
Even the cinema eclectic a lot will listen to that when we start using words like that. So... That time I got reincarnated as a slime, volume 5. So regular listeners may remember that in volume 4 we met the Orc Lord.
Yes.
And the Orc Lord was cutting a swathe through the woodland idyll that our slime had started to bring together as a kingdom. And at the behest of a wood nymph, Rimuru the Slime had agreed to confront the Orc Lord and try and...
Was she a wood nymph or was she a dryad? I can't remember.
She was both. She was both a dryad and a wood nymph. She was called both by Rimuru.
Ah, okay.
And so this is the big showdown between the Orc Lord and Rimuru, except that the Orc Lord finally meets his great destiny of becoming an orc disaster, which is some kind of demon version of an Orc Lord. Yeah. And much battling ensues, and we reach a sort of lull in proceedings. But as we found out towards the back end of issue 4, there's someone pulling the strings behind the Orc Lord. The Orc Lord's henchman comes into play a lot and may play a big part in episode 6. But yeah, so whereas episode 4 was a bit of a filler, there was a bit of a battle, but it was more of a skirmish, really.
Yeah.
The big battle is in episode 5, and that's what takes up most of the issue. Maybe the last chapter of volume 5 is sort of clearing up a few plot lines, tidying up, you know, dealing with henchmen, coming to an understanding with vanquished enemies and stuff. But you'll notice I've not mentioned whose enemies were vanquished. Uh-huh.
Ooh, plot twist.
Plot twist. And then I've got a feeling that the person pulling the strings behind the Orc Lord stroke Orc disaster is going to play his hand in volume 6, which I'm sure is due out soon. As usual, it's based on the novel created by Fuse. The manga is by Taiki Kawakami, and the characters are designed by Mitsvar. And typical of the series now, you've got the alternative version of events told in prose form by Veldora, the dragon. And you've also got the what I like to think of as sort of DVD extras, which are little outtakes from the mind of the creators. Some of them are between chapters, and some of them are just at the back, and it's like just little asides between sort of incidental characters talking to each other outside of the main plot.
I've got to admit, I like the you know, the things at the back, Veldora's take on things.
Yeah.
I like, one of my favourite bits is the bit where he's playing shogi, Japanese chess, against Ifrit, and Ifrit's been reading up on shogi, and so he's got really good at it. And yeah. Veldora just, he effectively flips the board by turning his king piece over and saying it's an emperor.
Yeah, you've also got one bit where one character's getting upset because he never makes it onto the cover.
Yes.
So yeah, it's great. There's little things going off in the like one of the ogres trying on Lord Rimuru's mask while the battle's raging off to one side, but the horn stops her getting the mask on. It remains fun, clever, nice little twists, and looking forward to volume 6, which, as I say, I suspect is probably going to be the final volume. If it's not, I worry that maybe it'll jump the shark.
I don't think it will. I've read the light novels and I know where the story's going. I don't think it will jump the shark in the way that you expect. It might jump the shark and surprise you.
Or it might literally jump the shark.
It might eat the shark instead.
And gain all the shark's special abilities.
Yeah. And this is Rimuru we're talking about. It's a very real possibility.
Indeed. So yeah, so that's Slime Volume 5.
So Andrew?
Yep, so finally, I think by the time this goes out, we should be pretty much just before Volume 2 of this comes out. I've been reading Ed Piskor's X-Men Grand Design.
You started drooling over this when I handed it over to you.
I did, because this is exactly the kind of incredibly nerdy thing that I live for. So this is cartoonist Ed Piskor. He's most well known for doing a series called Hip Hop Family Tree, which is basically a series sort of documenting the history of hip hop, and sort of like combining various sort of threads and tying them all together into sort of one story. And that's basically what he's done here with the X-Men. So this is kind of taking the entirety of Stan Lee and Jack Kirby's run and basically presenting it as like one big story.
Okay.
So kind of it ties a lot of things together. And it's like a primer for anyone sort of either wanting to get into the X-Men or sort of maybe even just wanting to go back through the sort of the older comics, but in a far less disjointed fashion than the original stories.
All right.
So the idea is it kind of takes things say there's one story where Cyclops' brother Alex, who later becomes the superhero Havoc, he's kidnapped by a guy called the Living Monolith wants to, like, absorb his powers. So they
are
take
you
that.
Are you sure it's not Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man in just, you know, having a rest day?
Yeah, maybe that's what he does on his downtime. He just turns into a giant slab. But no, so, like, in the original story, the Monolith kidnaps Alex and just tries to absorb his powers. But in this, they've tied it into this story. The idea is that a lot of villains have been motivated by, like, the emergence of the Phoenix Force. So like, it's instead of just being, like, a random standalone story, it's part of this bigger narrative of the Phoenixes coming to Earth, and everyone's trying to, like, prepare for that.
Okay.
Which is really neat.
Cool.
That's just, I like the way that it starts off, sort of, in the 1920s-ish, I think, with Namor sort of trying to destroy New York, because Namor is canonically a mutant now, and then it kind of jumps forward a few years, so it's like for World War II, Howard Stark enlists Charles Xavier's parents to help work on the atomic bomb, and because of that, they get exposed to radiation, which means when they give birth to Charles, that's where his mutant abilities come from. And it's just little things like having Magneto rescued from the concentration camp by Captain America, which also leads to a fun bit, because I say Captain America saves him. Captain America shows up and then Magneto saves himself by just, like, stealing his shield.
Oh, just... Magneto was always resourceful.
Exactly. But it's great to see this idea of all these sort of really random one-off story. Because that's especially back then how comics were written, was just every week the story being its own kind of self-contained thing. And just the idea of taking all that and sort of working it into one manageable, interconnected story.
See, that works for me. It also adds a new line to the Captain America song, since we now know Magneto can steal his shield as well, so Magneto doesn't have to yield.
He does not yield to the shield.
Hold on, what Captain America song?
When Captain America throws his mighty shield. You know the one from the original Captain America cartoon?
No.
I'd say you're missing out, but you definitely aren't.
No, you're not.
All right, then.
You want bad theme tunes? The one from the Incredible Hulk one was awful. Apparently the Hulk isn't glamorous.
Which, that's a filthy lie. Hulk is the most glamorous one there is.
And oddly, the only rhyme I can think of to go with that is amorous.
Hey, so going back to X-Men Grand Design.
Yes. Yes, like,
it's the kind of thing that I love, but I can also see it not really being someone's cup of tea, because the story is very much a, you know, kind of this happened, then some other stuff happened. Because it's more about sort of a big overview of X-Men history than going into, like, details.
See, do you know what might actually go really well with X-Men Grand Designs on your shelf, Andrew?
What?
Sparring with Gil Kane, since you like your comic book history so much.
Shut up, Rob. Just that I'm going to go and eat, like, 7 cupcakes, because I can.
Sorry, I couldn't resist. But I do get what you mean. I mean, I had a flick through Grand Designs before I handed it over to you. And it's the kind of thing that interests me as well, because I you know, the history of comic books is something that I do like reading up on. But you're more an aficionado on that than I am.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I would also recommend, like, anyone read this, because it's a great way to kind of catch up on what the history of the X-Men is without, like, brain melting continuity detail.
I mean, is this just going to be focused on the X-Men, or will it cover other superheroes this series?
Oh, no, I think this series is specifically the X-Men. Because, like, this is the Stan Lee and Jack Kirby run. I think Volume 2 is doing, like, the start of the Chris Claremont run.
Ooh, that should be good.
Yeah, it should. And, like, I like that they've already laid a lot of the foundation for that with stuff like the Phoenix. And, like, they've shown Charles Xavier meeting Storm in, like, the 1930s when she's just a child.
That's cool. I like that.
It is. It's really cool.
I mean, I just thought it'd be interesting if they did it for other titles, for things like Hulk and Iron Man and stuff like that, because some of the others, I mean, X-Men has wibbly continuity. We know that. Everybody knows that. But some of the others, the continuity in them is just as bad.
Oh, no. I would say nothing has as bad continuity as the X-Men.
That's a no Fantastic Four.
See, I know, even the Fantastic Four, it's mainly just Doctor Doom dying and coming back to life a lot. But the X-Men is, like, this character's child, but they're from an alternate future.
Yeah, there is that.
Or they're from not the future, but then they got sent to the future and came back as an old man.
I tried counting how many phoenixes there were at one point. I got lost.
Cyclops is a granddad.
Yeah. Well, not only is Cyclops a granddad, I mean, his son is Cable, but his son is also Strife, who is Cable.
And X-Man, who is Cable from an alternate universe.
Yeah. So basically, he had triplets, effectively.
And also, Rachel Summers, one of the other Phoenixes, is his daughter.
Yeah. See, this is where I started getting confused with the Phoenixes as soon as you started including Rachel Summers and that one with the, I don't know, she had like a, she wasn't Rachel Summers, she was the other one who had the weird things over her eyes. Like, she hadn't slept enough.
I think that's all the Phoenixes. Also, just really weird. Scott Summers and Jean Grey don't have any children together.
Yeah.
Like, the closest they have, well, I guess like they have Rachel and X-Man, but they're both from alternate realities.
See, it's as if that version, their reality version of Scott Summers and Jean Grey was told that babies appear with, you know, Starks deliver them.
I mean, basically, because X-Man was made by Mr. Sinister by taking their DNA and putting it in a big egg.
Exactly.
Again, I hate comics sometimes. Oh, that reminds me. You know your favourite character, Shatterstar?
Yes.
He's his own dad.
Yeah, I know that one.
And also Longshot's grandfather, I think.
Oh, God.
So good luck with all that, Ed Pisco.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think we're getting X-Men Grand Design Volume 3. I think we'll just find Ed Pisco rocking back and forth, drooling out the mouth.
And on that note, we're at the end of the show.
Or is it the beginning of the show?
We don't know.
No, it's the end.
It's definitely the end. All our shows are available on Audioboom and Apple Podcasts and our own website, as well as the podcast provider of your choice. Our website also has our other shows on there, our Patreon, and also our shop where you can buy some lovely merchandise. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. You've heard our tweet thing earlier in the show. Andrew said it, but say it again, Andrew.
It's at 4PanelPodcast. Yeah. Also, Ed Pisco, if you want to make another one of your fun continuity changes, can you maybe completely erase the part where Nightcrawler is an actual demon?
Yes, please erase that.
Just basically open up a box of X-Men comics and all the ones that say written by Chuck Austin, just burn them. Yeah. Burn them in a big fire.
Yeah, just do that. Do that. Anyway, that's us for this week. We'll see you all next week. Until then, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening. And remember, if we try hard enough, we can make things not have happened in comics.
Goodbye
now. We just need to believe.